our last presentation, and then we'll have some time for questions, is by Preeti Gadho. Okay. We're changing our ways, women as primary caregivers, and adaptions of food and physical activity-related health behaviors in semi-rural and rural American Indian Alaska Native households. That's a big title. A little bit about Preeti. She has over 10 years of experience with public health research. She is currently an assistant scientist at the Center for American Indian Health of the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg College of Public Health. Ms. Gadhok has an MPH in health policy and management from Emory University and is a PhD candidate at Bloomberg. At CIH, she is a principal investigator and lead evaluator of social, behavioral, and environmental interventions for diabetes prevention among American Indians.
Thank you. Good morning. And just an update, I graduated with my PhD, and this talk is actually based on part of my dissertation, which is part of an intervention trial for Native American populations. So it was four phases, and it's the development, implementation, and evaluation of obesity diabetes prevention program. Today I'm specifically focusing on some of the themes related to women as primary caregivers and really looking at from the context of the Americanization of, you know, indigenous communities, but then also when you think of it in the global context, the Americanization of tribal communities and racial ethnic minorities and traditional communities, as well as just traditions among many populations, and to think about some lessons learned. So in terms of the need, there's really limited research on women as primary caregivers. There are heuristics or shortcuts in terms of how do women help in terms of adapting to not only this rising obesogenic environment, also within resource-constrained environments. And thinking about, unfortunately, as of November 1st, we have 48 million Americans who lost additional benefits from the SNAP program. We are already resource-constrained. We already have economic downturn that we're dealing with and an economic depression. And now to actually have some of our safety programs be further cut, there is an even more of a critical need to really understand how households and women as primary caregivers really contend with balancing the health of their family, their own health, and the resources that they have at hand. So right, as it stands, we have an insufficient understanding of these decision-making processes at the household level and for women, also within the context of the relationships between women and their children. And then thirdly, that disadvantaged households, being low-income, insecure households, have really the highest burden of poverty, food insecurity, and chronic diseases in the United States. And of course, that's unfortunately growing rapidly globally as well. So in terms of the problem with low income and insecure households, these are a couple of pictures from my dissertation. I will discuss sort of the framework of the dissertation in a couple of slides. But here's at the top left is a picture in the upper Midwest of the United States, which faces severe winter weather. And usually, you know, the American Indians have to drive on average about 20 miles, 20 to 30 miles to get to a grocery store, to get to a gas station, and there may be just one school on the reservation. So thinking about semi-rural communities such as American Indians and the limited resources that they have. In the right-hand corner, there's the Southwestern reservation with the opposite end of severe weather. And driving distances are even longer, as some of you may know. It's up to 60 miles to drive to a grocery store. So here, you're really thinking about from a systems level, from kind of this, from this ecological, biocultural perspective, where you have already an environment that's just not conducive to healthy behaviors, on top of compounding the economic restraints and economic downturn that the families are facing. So in short, there are fewer opportunities for physical activity in semi-rural communities such as these Native American reservations where I've worked. There are greater exposure to also obesity-promoting, diabetes-promoting products, with the food industry and with the prepackaged foods, the high fructose corn syrup foods. And then really to think about stress in terms of the environment, but also think about stress in terms of social stressors, where you have extended households that may be living farther away from each other, and there is a need to caretake for each other within the context of this extended family system, such as American Indian cultures. And then the limited resources, including healthcare, as well as the lack of access to healthy foods. So just some basic statistics in terms of low-income and food-insecure households. We know that women, elderly, and children who are particularly vulnerable in the food-insecure households in terms of, socially as well as in terms of mental health issues, but within the context of chronic disease prevention, they're more likely to be overweight. Then an estimated 40 to 45% of families, and this is just from individual research studies because there is a lack of research in this area, including 29% of children actually have reported experiencing food insecurity on rural American Indian reservations, and twice as many American Indian households, so with children under ages 18 live in poverty, so that's 30% as compared to the United States general population, which is 15%. So in terms of looking now from the perspective of the community and the environment to women as primary caregivers, we know from research, for decades that women are continuing to be primary caregivers, and the latest studies show that within the United States, 3 out of 4 primary caregivers are still women. So, we have women contending with multiple gendered roles. We have women who remain traditionally the primary caregiver, whether it is in a joint household or with a single parent household. We have the role of working in the workforce and the dual role that involves, and as well as specifically related to caregiving of the households, women still remain responsible mostly for household chores, including food getting and food preparation, taking care of their loved ones when they're sick and when they're healthy. So there's this co-construction of agency of women in terms of self-care as well as for their household health production within the environment, but then also with their household members. There's a really interesting study, Zenk et al. 2011. It's the only study really out there qualitatively looking at women as caregivers and their heuristics for adapting to getting food and preparing food for their households. This is a community in Chicago, a low-income African-American population with women's narratives. And it's really interesting, the basic themes that they reported in the study are optimizing, settling, being proactive, and advocating. And what they mean by optimizing is that women on average travel to about 4 grocery stores to balance their household needs. So they would go to discount stores to buy the canned goods and the packaged goods. They'd go to the supermarkets to buy the fresh fruits and vegetables. They'd go to a specialty meat store to buy meat because the foods at the supermarkets and discount stores, the quality is not that great. And they would go to the corner stores or bodegas for the really kind of quick shortcut foods that they'd forget or they just need to replace, mostly sort of eggs and milk and bread. Settling then refers to food that you have to purchase as a primary caregiver when you need it, when you're running out of money. So it's that, the box of mac and cheese or it's the hamburger helper, right? And then you have being proactive. And under that theme, the discussion was about women adapting their shopping habits based on the safety of their neighborhood and the times of days as well as transportation access. And then finally, advocating that primary caregivers in this community actually advocated for, you know, more healthy foods in the stores and more safety around the stores. So given this context of this study, looking at women's adaptive strategies now in the American Indian population, because this has not been comprehensively studied, and secondly, there's really a need to understand across communities locally. So here is, you know, OPREVENT project. The purpose of OPREVENT was to assess a multi-level community-based program in Michigan and New Mexico, and it's based on a USDA grant. There are four components of the study, and right now it's in the middle of the post-intervention assessment. So the components are, there are four. The first one, which I was responsible for in my dissertation, was the school-to-family intervention, looking at how children are change agents and how women are also drivers in the household as change agents. The worksite, the food store, and the community media to come up with interventions that target those four components. And the four phases are the formative phase to inform intervention development. Phase two is a pre-intervention assessment. Phase three is the intervention. And phase four is the post-intervention assessment. So today I'm primarily focusing on some of the themes from phase one. Here's the biocultural framework that really informed my work, looking at the macro system. You know, you have the multiple structures within which we live. We've got the cultural identity. We have agency as a woman, agency as your race or ethnicity. And then you have the structures, which really certainly relate to political structures, economic structures, and environmental structures. You have the mesosystem, which is looking more at the institutions locally, such as education, health, workplace for a woman, the food system that the woman is balancing. And then the primary focus is the microsystem, the household, the family, the relationship between the child and adult, the child and the female caregiver, and then further down from that is looking at the individual behaviors as well as the health outcome of obesity status. The study is also informed mostly by resilience. We certainly understand vulnerabilities, but it's really important in looking further for intervention development to identify from a systems-based approach and a strengths-based approach resiliency as a form of adaptation and transformation, as how a woman's, you know, identity is connected to her multiple systems. And really to help enable women in communities to actually engage in the health behaviors to help others. So thinking about the Zenk et al. Study, you know, we also found that women had multiple optimizing strategies that I've actually termed maximizing here, and maximizing in terms of the same kind of grocery stores. On average, about three to four stores were visited for purchasing very similar habits of going to discount stores for the packaged foods, going to supermarkets for fresh fruits and vegetables, going to specialty local meat stores, as well as the difficulty with transportation is, you know, on reservations you don't have public transportation, but not only do you not have public transportation, few families have vehicles, so it's a matter of also maximizing when a car is available within your household or within your community, sometimes hitching a ride literally on the back of a pickup, which I've seen in the Southwest, as well as Michigan, to make these trips happen. And sometimes maximizing also means that when you don't have access, that you have to wait it out and you have to have, ramen noodles were a big type of food that were eaten at the end of the WIC program, at the end of the food stamp program when the money is out and there's no transportation. Planning ahead refers to making food shopping lists and involving the family in food shopping. Apportioning refers to not only looking at portion sizes of the food when you have families with households, with 5 to 6 children, but also in terms of healthy versus unhealthy. How do you balance that? And I heard a lot about, you know, I'm not gonna lie, we do snack. The kids love the chocolate. I can't get it out of my daughter's hand. But what I do is I, you know, try to balance that with healthy foods. So it's really interesting to see a very high level also of nutrition literacy, understanding that the major risk factors for diabetes and obesity are, you know, the food and the physical activity, but then also within food, understanding these Americanized foods and their high risk towards obesity and diabetes, and understanding that fruits and vegetables are important and essential for health. So it really does, you know, we need to, in our interventions go beyond the education. We know that education and knowledge is not enough in public health. Mm-hmm. We need to have the systems reinforced to help the actual health behaviors and providing the resources. Another theme is tempting healthy, which I'll read a couple of these quotes for you. Tempting healthy refers to, just what it sounds like, that the children, the mom tries to tempt the child into having carrots and ranch as a snack instead of a bag of potato chips. And then because this is actually extending beyond nutrition, looking at how to encourage activity in the household, going for a walk together in the household around the block. And then finally tapping into support, you know, looking at the multiple systems beyond the household, the extended family network, and tapping into that, as well as the institutional support. What health programs are in the neighborhood? What health programs is the tribe offering that can help the family, can help the woman, you know, provide the resources and provide the healthy behaviors for her family? So the first quote is planning ahead. Here's a 41-year-old Potawatomi mother. She's married. She has 3 children. She has a husband. And she stated, I visited her house, and she, you know, sat across from the table from me, and she's just talking to me about her daily habits, and that's how we started the conversations. Tell me about your day. You know, so she gets to talking about her food shopping. I tell everybody in the house the night before that I'm going grocery shopping tomorrow, so if you want something, you better get it on the list tonight. And I will pester them all so at least there's one of their things on the list. So here's the sense of balancing their wants with needs and the resources, the multiple desires in the household. There's tapping into support. Here's a 35-year-old single Potawatomi mother of 3 children, who stated the importance of having a best friend. And there was a lot of discussion about women friends, a lot of discussion about the mother and the grandmother, as well as cousins and sisters, certainly. So here she stated, my best friend, we have family dinners together and we have a taco date. We used to have it every weekend, and now it's whenever we can get everyone together. And that part of the family is also trying to get healthier. So they're trying to get healthier, we're trying to get healthier, we're trying to influence each other. So it's kind of a concerted effort of our mini family. And then finally, tempting healthy is a 27-year-old single Potawatomi mother who stated, we snack all the time, but they're healthy snacks. Instead of grabbing a bag of chips and a candy bar, you can have a yogurt and string cheese and fruit that they're grabbing instead. So to recognize that that is an option. So there are many other themes here, and I just wanted to highlight some key ones in terms of looking at women's heuristics. So in terms of future conclusions and future directions, you know, it's really critical to understand how women as primary caregivers are strategizing these healthy foods to their households on a budget. One thing they requested for is we need more cooking programs for food for families. We also want food shopping courses on how to shop on a budget within the multicultural context, extending beyond the indigenous context. Local and state programs and policies really do need to increase a focus upon family-centered approaches, including the individual approach, but involving a family member, because we do know the importance of multiple, our ethnic groups and our indigenous populations in the United States clearly are very family-oriented, such as the example here. to inform federal programs such as really SNAP and WIC to better address the needs of households on comprehensive chronic disease prevention. It certainly, as I mentioned, it's difficult to do so when you have budget cuts. To include women as primary caregivers, conceptualizations and strategies in the prevention of chronic disease dialogue for households more overtly. And this information was utilized towards developing the intervention materials. So for instance, there are many materials that we designed focusing on the child and mom working out. As was suggested, for instance, having a mother-daughter walking date or having a father-son basketball date, things of that nature. So that is essentially the study, and thank you.
Interesting question, because I just moved back to Oakland from Seattle and trying to figure out my insurance from USC, and I wanted this guy who was at Kaiser, but they don't have Kaiser in Northern California, so now I'm on USC's insurance, so I'm about to run out of meds in about 2 weeks, so I need to find somebody, and I'm getting referrals from other people, but usually the good people, you can't get in to see them because you can't get an appointment. And I'm at the point where I just want somebody to write me a prescription, which sounds really horrible, but it's efficient. Because I mean, right. And so I think the challenge is, again, that mental health resources in the U.S. are very limited. They're limited elsewhere, but they're more efficient elsewhere. I spent a year in London, and there was they tend to be, their health care is geographic. So you live someplace, your doctor is 2 blocks or 3 blocks away. And I walked in there with a letter from my doctor. I didn't want to carry all these pills for several months with me, so a friend was going to mail them. They hadn't arrived. And I walked in and I said, here's this letter from my doctor. I need these meds, blah, blah. The woman types them in, and she says, they should be available at the pharmacy within the hour. And I looked at her going, I just got to London yesterday, and they're going to be drunk in an hour. So I go there, and I'm now thinking, well, how much is it? And the guy says, well, because you take hormones, he says, it's free. And I went, free? As in all of this stuff is mine? And I was just like stuffing them in a bag and running away. it was I was going just before you figure out that this is all wrong. And it was really interesting for me because I do comparative health stuff, policy, and to see it in practice was just something insane to me. And she gave me the referral for the psychiatrist in the area, said, make an appointment because we want to make sure we give you a baseline. But she said, if you have a crisis, you call and they will see you right away.
Oh my God.
And I just went, okay, whatever is wrong with your system, it's still better than what I'm used to. So, and I was at Group Health in Seattle where it's all integrated, kind of like a Kaiser to HMO. HMOs are easier because they have people in their system and it's in their interest for you to see somebody. What I'm going through now, which I've always had HMOs, is that I have to now find somebody on my own. And I think part of the challenge, and this is, I mean, if I go right now on Facebook and go through 5 different bipolar groups, everybody talks about finding the right person. And you can't find the right person until you see more than one person. And so that's a real challenge. And I had a team at one point because I really was, I mean, I always said they were holding me up. I had a psych nurse, a social work therapist, and a psychiatrist, and they worked really well together. And I mean, if I called and I was in, somebody would talk to me, somebody would see me. And I have a little bit of anxiety, to be honest, about what it's going to be like in Oakland. I'm lucky that I have social worker friends who, I'm a social worker, so they're all, you know, doing the thing with the phone, and I know this girl, and she's really good, and I tell them I want holistic, because I don't really just, I can't, I think part of the challenge for mental illness is that people think you should just be happy to be functional, you know, like, you can be a disability and be home, but that was never what I wanted to do, and so that's always been a challenge for medication, because I still want to be clear and sharp. And how do you do that on some of these medications is really difficult. And some doctors sort of say, well, you're pushing yourself too hard. You're asking too much of yourself. And that to me is a big flag, because then what they're saying is, well, just be happy that, you know, you're not sitting drooling in a corner. And so I think that is your question is just so timely, and I think I want to see what happens with the ACA around this, because access to services, because it's ongoing. It's not like you go and you're done in 3 weeks. You have to get your blood test. Right, you have to get your blood test every 3 months, because like you say, you might get kidney disease like I did. And for me, I even took the chance, talked to my doctor and said, I want to stick it out and see if I still have kidney disease next 3 months. She didn't want to wait 3 months. The next month, I still had kidney disease, so we changed, you know, my dosage. So I think access is the biggest challenge, because psychiatrists are not easy to come by.
Right. No, and especially if you have to deal with like a child.
Mm-hmm. Right.
A child or a teenager or preteen, they don't even want to talk to them.
No, and the thing is, right, and psychiatrists are hard, and yet you need medication. You can find a social worker or a therapist, but they can't prescribe and they can't monitor the meds.
And they don't
so,
talk to
right.
And a lot of psychiatrists don't take insurance.
Right. Right. Yes. Because one of the ones that my doctor wanted to refer me to, she was like, he's expensive.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.